7. But Gideon was dead wrong. He'd never run into a cop like Mike Clapper before, a fact that was made clear to him the following day. With Julie, he was having lunch at Tregarthen's Hotel, another establishment like Star Castle with proud historical associations, but of a literary sort. Plaques on the walls proclaimed that both George Eliot and Alfred Lord Tennyson had spent time there. They ate in the airy, Danish modern bar, its cool blues and golds a nice contrast to the brooding, dark wood ambiance of Star Castle. After a light meal of steamed clams and a couple of glasses of Skinner's Cornish blonde beer, citrusy and weedy, and the waiter's excellent suggestion to accompany the clams, they took their coffee outside to one of the umbrellaed tables on the terrace overlooking the Old Quay and the Outer Islands. Julie had considerably failed to mention his promise of the day before to pay for lunch out of his poker winnings, for which he was grateful. They watched the Salonian ferry disembark its first passenger load of the day, and were on their second cups, silently enjoying the wisps of cloud, the sun-dappled water, and the faint tinge of white mist on the horizon, when Gideon spotted Police Constable Rob going in the hotel's front door, quite handsome in full uniform, blue tunic, bucket helmet, dark tie and all. Rob saw him at the same time and came over for a friendly hello. "I'm glad to see you, Dr. Oliver," he said after he'd been introduced to Julie. "I was hoping to have a chance to speak with you. I'm in for a quick sandwich. All right if I join you?"
"Sure, pull up a chair."
"I'll just order inside, faster that way. Back in a tick." "He seems as nice as you said," Julie remarked as he disappeared inside.
"Oh, a good kid, very nice. It's Clapper that's the hard case, I'm telling you. I'd have slugged the guy if he'd treated me the way he treated Rob."
"Yeah, right," Julie said, and they both laughed. When Rob returned with a ham sandwich and a can of English lemonade, the first thing he did was strip off his coat and helmet and lay them neatly on an unused chair.
"Ah, that's better."
Glaring at the helmet, he massaged his temples. "That thing is like wearing a pail on your head."
"You can't wear the soft cap?" Gideon asked. "I saw a couple in your office."
"Oh, generally we do, when we wear a cap at all. But I've only just come up from key duty, seeing in the ferry, and the tourists, you know. They like to see them." "Well," he smiled and shrugged, "a policeman's lot is not a happy one." "Taking one consideration with another," Julie recited, which pleased him, and together they sang a few more lines of patter from Pirates of Penzance. While he ate, they engaged in small talk. What did Julie do? She was a park ranger. How interesting. Where was Rob from? Bournemouth, on his last 3 months of a 2-year assignment to St. Mary's. What was life like in the Sillies? Quiet. But Gideon could feel him edging closer to whatever it was he was anxious to talk about, and finally he got there.
"I hope you'll come by and see the sergeant about that bone again," he said as he finished the first half of the sandwich, and used a napkin to pluck a crumb from the corner of his mouth. "I'm sure you could be a great deal of help on the case."
"What case?" Gideon asked. He didn't seem very interested in opening one yesterday.
"I grant you his manner can be a bit, unfortunate at times. Sometimes I have to step in and smooth the waters a bit."
"As you're doing now?" Julie asked.
"As I'm doing now. But underneath his rough exterior, you see, there lies a heart of gold," Gideon said.
Rob laughed with patently real amusement.
"Well, no, I wouldn't go so far as to say that. But 4 out of 5 days he's quite approachable, quite genial even."
"Obviously, then, I hit him on day 5.
"In a way, yes. Exeter had been nagging him all morning. That always puts him in a foul mood."
"I see. It wasn't my personality that set him off. It was just my rotten timing."
"Very much so," Rob said, nodding eagerly. "His attitude is entirely different today, entirely. You'd hardly know he was the same man. He's had me open a case log on the matter, and he's been hard at the computer, searching for possible leads on that bone ever since."
Gideon was astonished.
"He has. What brought about this change?"
"Well, you see, he telephoned headquarters about it, as required in possible homicide cases. The usual procedure would be for them to send a detective constable from St. Ives to determine if foul play is really a possibility. If so, a detective inspector, or perhaps a chief inspector from Touro, or possibly from Plymouth, would be assigned as SIO, that is, as senior investigative officer. Gideon hadn't remembered that Rob was so talky.
I'm afraid I don't see.
Well, the thing is, I gather they pretty much laughed at him. One piece of bone from who knows where with a few marks on it, and so on, and implied that the detective force had better things to do, and he was entirely free to pursue it on his own. So that put a different light on it, do you see? It's his case now, not theirs.
Gideon pondered. Look, Constable, did he tell you to ask me to come in again?
No, I can't say that he did, but...
Then I don't see the point. I'm not going to go barging in where I'm not wanted.
He realized as he said it how pompous it sounded, and tacked on a gentler addendum.
Of course, if he does ask me, I'd be happy to.
I'm sure he will ask you, but knowing him, it'll take a few days for him to get around to it. And inasmuch as you said you'd only be here a few days, I was afraid it might be too late by then. I thought I should strike while the iron's hot.
Their waiter came by with Rob's check and more coffee for Julie and Gideon. Gideon sipped and considered.
I don't think so, he said. I just don't feel comfortable.
Oh, go ahead, Julie said. You know you want to. If someone's really been murdered, you're not going to be happy walking away from it when you probably could be of some help.
Gideon shook his head.
Nope, I don't think so.
Being pressed from both sides was making him more stubborn than he might have been otherwise.
Dr. Oliver, Rob said.
Gideon.
And I'm Kyle, Rob said with his sweet smile. Look, may I tell you a little about the sergeant? Do you have a few minutes?
Sure, Gideon said, curious in spite of himself.
Julie, always interested in what promised to be a human interest story, nodded as well, although it was likely to make her late for the consortium's afternoon session. Rob pushed aside the last quarter of his sandwich, drained his lemonade, and collected his thoughts.
Well, you have to understand.
But he decided he needed another beginning and started again.
This is hardly the sort of thing I'd ordinarily tell anyone, you see, let alone a relative stranger, but...
Another false start. He thought for a moment more before hitting on the opening he wanted.
Sergeant Clapper, he said, is not what he seems.
That was putting it mildly. Harry Michael Clapper had had quite a life before becoming a policeman. The son of a London liquor wholesaler, he had joined the army at an underage 17, spending over 20 years in the service. He had been wounded and twice decorated for bravery during the Falklands War, and had retired in 1988 as regimental sergeant major, about as high as a non-commissioned officer could go. He had knocked around for a while after that, and then, in 1990, at the advanced age of 40, he had submitted an application to the Devon and Cornwall Constabulary to become a police officer. To his own surprise, he was accepted. He breezed through the local training program in Exeter, came in first in his class at the 15-week residential course at the National Police Training Center in Bramshill, and was assigned to Torquay as a traffic constable. While still in his 2-year probationary period, he had gotten a rare chief constable commendation, the first one that had ever been given to a probationer, for actions over and above the requirements of the service. Off duty, out of uniform, alone and weaponless, he had broken up an armed robbery, subduing the two perpetrators and sitting on them, literally, until a couple of police cars, summoned by the Australian victim, could arrive. On completion of his probation, he was transferred to the Criminal Investigation Department and posted to Plymouth as a detective constable. There, he not only completed university, but compiled an extraordinary record of cases successfully closed that made him the only person in the department's long history to earn Officer of the Year honors 3 times. He was the subject of several Sunday magazine articles and was part of a BBC television special, The New Sherlock Holmeses, England's Greatest Detectives. By 2000, he had advanced to Detective Chief Inspector.
Wait a minute, Gideon said,
He was shaking his head incredulously.
Hold on, Kyle. Are we really talking about the same Mike Clapper? He was a famous detective? He was a chief inspector. What's he doing as a constable sergeant out in the Sillies? What happened to him? Was he demoted?
Not exactly, Rob said. But just when he was at the top of the heap, a lot of things began going wrong for him. His life pretty much came apart.
First, and probably most important, his wife of nearly 30 years died after a long, exhausting battle with cancer. Then, only a few weeks after her funeral, he received word that the position of detective superintendent, for which he'd applied months earlier, had gone to a much younger man with little more than half his experience and nowhere near his record of medals, commendations, and successes. What he did have was training in community relations and 3 years' experience as departmental ombudsman, two areas that, as far as Clapper was concerned, had nothing to do with real police work, the meat of which was persistence, legwork, and the dogged, life-encompassing determination to put the bad guys away. After that, it was all downhill. Clapper turned bitter and became increasingly solitary. Once the pride of the department, he became perceived by his higher-ups as an anachronism, a stubbornly old-fashioned copper who had stayed beyond his time and whose hard-nosed approach to the job was outmoded and discredited. His positions on what policing was all about, and especially what it wasn't about, had brought a string of in-house complaints from the chief of community relations, the representative of the Gay Police Association, and the head of the Diversity Enhancement Task Force. More than that, his increasingly negative attitude was becoming a bad influence on the younger members of the force. And on top of that, Rob hesitated.
Well, he began...
He had... other problems, too.
Alcohol, said Gideon.
Exactly. He was drinking too much.
It was time for him to go, and various efforts, some subtle, some not, were made to retire him, either voluntarily or otherwise. But with 2 years left to qualify for a full pension, he wasn't about to be made redundant, and there was no way to force him. After considerable dickering, an unusual compromise was reached. Clapper would be transferred from the large port city of Plymouth to the obscure, virtually crime-free outpost of St. Mary's, where he could harmlessly serve out his time without getting into trouble or offending anyone. But for him to assume the position of the Sillies' neighborhood beat manager required that he be downgraded from detective inspector to constable sergeant. This he reluctantly accepted, with the proviso that his grade for pension purposes remain that of chief inspector. To this, the department agreed, and to the Sillies he came, and here he had been for the last 6 months, out of the mainstream and pretty much going through the motions.
Not that much beyond going through the motions is generally required here, Rob said with a smile. We're not what you might call a hotbed of crime, but you can imagine how tough it must be on the old man to be reporting to people in Exeter who don't know the half of what he does.
Well, I admit, Gideon said as their waiter came to pick up their payments. I'm impressed. About the only thing I had right about him was that he was counting the days to retirement.
Which isn't hard to understand, Rob said. Things haven't been easy for him.
They can't have been too easy for you either, said Gideon. I didn't get the impression he was the easiest boss in the world to work for.
Oh, not so bad. One has to make allowances. One has to consider who he is. It's been a privilege to work with him, really. I've learned a lot.
I admire your staying power, Gideon said.
Well, yes, it was a little hard at first, Rob admitted. But after a couple of months on the island, he mellowed. He likes the idea of living at the police station, for one thing.
He lives at the police station? Julie said, surprised.
Well, above it.
Above the store, as we say, Rob said, with a smile.
Upstairs on the first floor. My wife and I do, too. There are several flats up there. It used to be a common arrangement years ago, but you don't see it much anymore except in out-of-the-way places like this. And then...
He hesitated. The fact is, he's gotten himself a lady friend who more or less lives there, too. That's really mellowed him. For one thing, she's gotten him off the sauce.
He's a teetotaler now, which has made all the difference in the world. He's put his life together again. But any time he has to deal with Exeter, he shook his head. He's an unhappy man.
They got up from the table and walked to the terrace's metal railing to look out over the water at the outer islands for a few moments. The sun was warm on their faces, the breeze cool.
That's Samson on the left, Rob said, slipping on his tunic. And Tresco over there, and Briar lies between them. Beautiful, aren't they?
Lovely, Julie agreed.
Enjoy the view while you can. This is what we call fog season, you know, and it looks like it may be a bad one. It's already starting to build out there. I suspect we'll be sucked in pretty soon now.
He sighed, put on his helmet, adjusted the chin strap, and tapped it into place with his palm.
Ouch!
But it's so becoming on you, Julie said.
Rob smiled his thanks.
So what do you say, sir? Will you come by the station? Any time now would be fine. He'll have come back from lunch.
Okay, I'll be there in half an hour or so. And Kyle, I want you to know I appreciate this. I hated to just let it drop.
You're welcome. Mostly I'm doing this for the sergeant. I know that working on a real murder case again would do him a world of good. Otherwise, you know, I'd never have said. I wouldn't have told you.
I understand. But listen, you're sure he hasn't gotten any calls from Exeter today?
None, Rob said, laughing. He's as gentle as...
A lamb, Gideon finished for him.
An old lion with most of his teeth pulled would be closer to it, Rob said. And then, in friendly warning, but not all of them.